Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites onthisday.com and mentalfloss.com. Question number one, which one of the following did not occur this very weekend in history? Was it A, Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians recorded Auld Lang Syne in 1939? Was it B, Beavis and Butthead premiered on MTV as a series in 1993? Was it C, the streaming service Spotify makes its U.S. debut in 2001? Or was it D, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that parodies that poke fun at an original work can be considered, quote-unquote, fair use that does not require permission from the copyright holder in 1994 this weekend. So, three of these four important events in music actually occurred during this very weekend in history. Which one of these four did not? And question number two, what is the correct answer to that perennial question, do dogs enjoy music? Is it A, no, research indicates that dogs avoid all types of music? Is it B, yes, research indicates that dogs do like all types of music? Or is it C, yes and no, research indicates that dogs like some types of music, but dislike other types of music. So what does the science say about this relationship between music and dogs? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March the 7th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1875, that French composer, pianist, and conductor Maurice Ravel was born. Ravel was known for such compositions as Bolero. Ravel intended it to be a Spanish-flavored ballet score for his friend, Ida Rubinstein, who was a Russian dancer. Maurice Ravel's B-Day, today, in 1875. And it was 115 years ago today, 1910, that American composer, conductor, pianist, baritone, and music educator Samuel Barber was born. Barber was known for such compositions as Adagio for Strings. Born today in 1910. And finally in transitions, the house where 28,000 records burned. Charlie Springer spent a lifetime building his music collection. The Los Angeles fires incinerated it. This is published in The Atlantic by Nancy Wilecki on February 13th, 2025. Before it burned, Charlie Springer's house contained 18,000 vinyl LPs, 12,000 CDs, 10,000 45s, 4,000 cassettes, 600 78s, 158 tracks, hundreds of signed musical posters, and about 100 gold records. The albums alone occupied an entire wall of shelves in the family room and another in the garage. On his desk were a set of drumsticks from Nirvana and an old RCA microphone that Prince had given to him at a recording session for the Prince album. A neon Beach Boys sign, as far as he knows, one of only eight remaining in the world, hung above the dining table. In his laundry room was a Gibson guitar, signed by the Everly Brothers. Near his fireplace, a white Stratocaster, signed to him by Eric Clapton. Last month, the night the Eaton fire broke out, Charlie evacuated to his girlfriend's house. And when he came back, the remnants of his home had been bleached by the fire. The spot in the family room where the record collection had been was dark ash. His house had once been called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame West. Charlie's collection started when he was six. He had asked his mother to get him the record, quote-unquote, about the dog. And when she'd brought back Patty Page's "How Much Is That Doggy in the Window?" No, no, not that one. He wanted a 45 of Elvis's recently released single, Hound Dog. He would cart it around with him for the next seven decades across several states before placing it on his shelf in Altadena. At age eight, he mowed lawns and shoveled snow in his hometown outside Chicago to afford Sweet Little 16 by Chuck Berry and Tequila by the Champs. When he was nine, he got Ray Charles's What I Say. And when he was 10, he walked into his local record shop and found its owner sitting on the floor, frazzled, surrounded by piles of records. Every week, the owner had to rearrange the records on the wall to reflect the order of the top 40 chart made by the local radio station WLS. Charlie offered to help. His weekly pay? Two singles a week. When he was 12, he bought his first full albums, Surfing Safari by the Beach Boys and Green Onions by Booker T and the MGs. He entered a Wisconsin seminary 2 years later, hoping to become a priest. Radios were contraband, but Charlie taped one underneath the chair next to his bed, and at night, while 75 other students slept around him, he would use an earbud to listen to WLS. Seminarians could go into town only if it was necessary. So Charlie would purposely break his glasses and run between the optometrist and the five and dime store. That's how he got more records from the Beach Boys, the Kinks, and the Loving Spoonfuls' Daydream. The article skips down, ends with this. He moved to L.A. in the 80s to be Warner's national sales manager. And in 1991, he bought his home in Skyland Drive in Altadena. He started placing thousands of his albums on those shelves in the family room. He papered the walls and ceiling of his bathroom with the WLS surveys he started collecting as a child. Every record he pulled off the shelf came with a memory, and if he kept an album or a memento in his house, quote-unquote, it was a good story. And as the story began, before it burned, Charlie Springer's house contained 18,000 vinyl LPs, 12,000 CDs, 10,000 45s, 4,000 cassettes, 678s, 158 tracks, hundreds of signed musical posters, and about 100 gold records. All gone. Vivaldi's Spring, from his Four Seasons, introduces our classical music news. Soundtrack your spring with these nine gorgeous works. Classical music has delivered some blissful and exciting evocations of the joys of spring, from Vivaldi to Copland. And here are nine of the best. This is written by BBC Music Magazine, the 3rd of March, 2025. The weather's turning milder, days are longer, and the first buds of spring blossoms are starting to show. To celebrate, we take a look at some of the best music inspired by spring. Number one, Robert Schumann, Symphony Number 1, Spring. The month of March, they say, comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. Appropriately, Schumann's Spring Symphony No. 1 introduces itself with something of an icy blast. The composer himself originally subtitled the first movement, The Beginnings of Spring. Things then warm up over the next three movements of this wonderfully life-affirming work, first performed under the baton of Schumann's friend Felix Mendelssohn in March 1841. After a gentle second movement, an energetic scherzo, the buoyant finale celebrates a world in which all is now truly green, one of the most vivid evocations of spring in classical music. Antonio Vivaldi comes in at number 2 with Spring from the Four Seasons, the song playing in the background now. In the Four Seasons, Antonio Vivaldi's vivid set of four violin concertos, spring is joyful, energetic, and optimistic. The famous opening movement, full of imitations of birdsong, murmuring brooks, and soft breezes, gives way to a sleepier largo in which a goat herd sleeps next to a faithful dog, represented by a barking viola, line before the final rustic dance of nymphs and shepherds leads the concerto to a harrumphing conclusion. Number 3, Frederick Delius, On Hearing the First Cuckoo in Spring. Take a springtime woodland walk, and you may be lucky enough to hear the distinctive call of a cuckoo. Delius incorporates the bird's distinctive sound in his delightful tone poem. Number 4, Amy Beach, The Years at the Spring. Of Amy Beach's 150 or so songs, The Years at the Spring is possibly the best known. Written in 1899, this soaring and optimistic work is one of three texts by the English poet Robert Browning that Beach set to music. Number 5, Benjamin Britten, The Succession of the Four Sweet Months. In Britten's setting of this poem by Robert Herrick, each of the four sweet months is represented by a different voice. First, April, sung by the sopranos. May is represented by the altos, June and the tenors. And finally, July arrives with the bass line. Number 6, Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring. With its fresh colors, clean lines, and dancing rhythms, Copland's Appalachian Spring has become one of the most popular pieces. It tells the tale of a young American pioneer couple who celebrates their springtime wedding. The piece culminates in the uplifting variations on the Shaker hymn, Simple Gifts. Number 7, Felix Mendelssohn's Spring Song, a light and joyful piano piece. This classic is full of gentle melodies that capture the essence of spring. Number 8, Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. Stravinsky's extraordinary ballet, The Rite of Spring, depicts ancient rituals associated with the coming of spring and the associated rebirth of the natural world after the sleep of winter. And coming in at number 9, last but not least, Beethoven's Symphony No. 6, Pastoral. A tribute to nature, this symphony's first movement conveys the joy of arriving in the countryside in springtime. The following movement, seen by the brook, also evokes the vivid, optimistic atmosphere of spring. And in music research and technology, experience. I'm the karaoke world champion. I had to sing 4 songs in front of judges and a live audience, and I was up against people from 42 countries. On stage, I was trembling. This is published in The Guardian by Elizabeth Moya on the 14th of February, 2025. The first time I sang karaoke was in a bar in my hometown in Chile. I sang Hero by Mariah Carey. I remember being so nervous with everyone watching me. I was only 17, but I won. Since that first time singing Mariah, karaoke has become a part of me. I sing every day in my room, in the shower, when I'm cleaning the house. I love all kinds of music, rock, hip-hop, kariba. Kumba. I never thought it would turn into a career. I used to do odd jobs in hospitality, but about 7 years ago, when I was 26, I began uploading videos of myself singing over songs online. I soon got my first booking to perform in a local casino. Since then, I've been singing professionally in casinos, restaurants, and malls across Chile. It's been great training for karaoke. I sing everything, pop in English, pop in Spanish, Latino rock, English rock, to rancheras and reggaeton. 5 years ago, I started applying for singing competitions. I was a semifinalist in The Voice Chile in 2022. Last year, I won the heats of the Karaoke World Championships in Chile, making it to the finals in Finland. We all know karaoke as a fun activity to do with friends on a night out, but competitive karaoke is all around us. Look at singing contests such as The Voice or The X Factor. In competitions, judges are not only evaluating your skills as a singer, but also how you interpret the song, the intonation, the diction, and your mastery of the stage. For me, karaoke is about expressing your feelings through the song. I'm not good at talking about my feelings, but I can do that through other people's lyrics. And that's what you have to do to succeed at karaoke. The big difference between a singing competition and a karaoke competition is that in karaoke, you have the lyrics on a screen. Still, it's a world away from a late-night bar when you're clowning around with friends. I still love that kind of karaoke, though. I'll make sure my friends get the chance to sing more than me. Article skips down, ends with this. When they announced that I had won, I was in shock. My heart was beating fast, and I felt full of happiness. All the competitors were excellent singers who have successful careers in music, so I couldn't believe it. It might sound strange, but even today I still struggle to acknowledge the achievement. I get imposter syndrome. Though now, after all these years, I'm starting to record music I've written myself. Still, it's amazing that karaoke is a big part of my life, and to think that it all began with Mariah Carey. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which one of the following did not occur this very weekend in history? Was it A, Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians recorded Auld Lang Syne in 1939? Was it B, Beavis and Butthead premiered on MTV as a series in 1993? Was it C, the streaming service Spotify makes its U.S. debut in 2001? Or was it D, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that parodies that poke fun at an original work can be considered fair use that does not require permission from the copyright holder in 1994 this weekend? As noted in a November 25, 2019 article by Amy X. Wang in Rolling Stone magazine titled The 50 Most Important Music Moments of the Decade from 2010 to 2019, both the business and culture of music went through an unprecedented revolution. Here are the biggest, craziest moments to remember. In July of 2011, Spotify makes its U.S. debut, leading initially to the publication of headlines like, quote-unquote, "What's this Spotify thing about?" But the streaming service will go on to become one of the country's most popular music platforms and amass 248 million global users by the end of 2019, with an aggressive growth plan for the next decade. OnThisDay.com notes that the other three events listed in the answers to this question, 1939's Guy Lombardo and the Royal Canadians' Auld Lang Syne, 1994's the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that parodies that poke fun at original work can be considered fair use and not require permission from the copyright holder, and 1993's Beavis and Butthead premiere on MTV as a series did in fact occur on this very day in history. So answer C is the correct answer. And the answer to our second question, what is the correct answer to the perennial question, do dogs enjoy music? Was it A, no research indicates that dogs avoid all types of music? Was it B, yes, research indicates that dogs do like all types of music? Or was it C, yes and no, research indicates that dogs like some types of music but dislike other types of music? Correct answer is answer C, yes and no. As noted in an article by Kay Lee Johnson, published in MentalFloss.com on the 2nd of March 2025, titled, Do Dogs Enjoy Music? Music is known to have a profound effect on humans, according to Healthline. It can improve memories and help lower anxiety and depression. But do dogs enjoy listening to music as much as people do? Studies on the effects of music on dogs are limited, especially when compared to humans. Some evidence suggests dogs may be comforted, as in feeling less stressed or anxious when listening to classical music. Researchers from the Sydney School of Veterinary Science examined 9 studies of the effect of music on dogs in 2020. Their findings, published in the journal Animals, indicated that the classical genre soothed canines as the pups exhibited calmer behaviors, lying down, resting, sitting, etc., while the music played. It's important to note that many of the previous studies took place in typically stressful environments, such as veterinary hospitals, boarding kennels, and rescue shelters, rather than in houses. Amy Campbell, a certified dog trainer, told the Dog Care Services website Rover that not all classical music has the same effect. Some pieces contain loud sounds that may actually induce stress. The animals also seem to have specific musical tastes. A 2023 study in the journal Animal Welfare found that heavy metal music caused stress in shelter dogs, as many barked as the music played. You may have heard of quote-unquote dog music. If not, it's exactly what you think. They're tunes made specifically to relax Fido. There are several free playlists of such songs on YouTube, but the above-mentioned 2020 study found that dogs didn't appear calmer when listening to specialized music, a collection called Through a Dog's Ear in this case, compared to regular classical music. Now, if you'd like to try soothing your dog with music, Rover suggests paying attention to their behavior as the tune plays. You'll also want to ensure you don't have the volume too loud. Last but not least, check to see if your pet avoids rooms with music, as this may show they prefer quiet environments. So, let's close out today's program with Barber's Adagio for Strings. Well, partly because it's Barber's B-Day, and partly because it is dog-friendly. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.